90 minutes is about my cutoff point for starting to ingest carbohydrate during exercise. And there are many, many studies now to show that when you are competing in events or even training in events, anything longer than 90 minutes, that you should be ingesting carbohydrate.
Hello, everyone. How are we today? This is Vikas, and you are listening to the Run with Fit page. Running season has just gotten over here in India, and that gives an opportunity for us to plan and work on that plan. And because of that, I thought one of the most important points for you to consider as you restart your training, as you plan your strategies, will be to look at your fueling, to look at your nutrition for your training as well as for your racing. Some of you who are going to the World Major Marathons and are running internationally, you might find this helpful to plan your next race in April as well as in September or October. Now, what am I talking about? Today, I am going to talk to Professor John Hawley to talk about the role of carbohydrate in training and in racing. We will also be talking about the specifics of how much of carbohydrate is required, how should you consume it, when should you consume it. We also will talk about the role of caffeine. Does fat-adapted training help you? What does it mean to be sufficiently fueled for training as well as for racing? What are the strategies for carb loading? How to be ready for the race from nutrition point of view? We will talk about all of these points in the next 40 minutes. So please take a pen and paper again and welcome Professor John Hawley to the show. He's not only a great runner himself, but someone who's very, very well researched, very well established, very well decorated when it comes to academics, when it comes to teaching. Professor Hawley is the director at Mary MacKillop Institute for Health Research. He's director of Exercise and Nutrition Research Program at Australian Catholic University. And if you look him up online, you will find hundreds of his research papers on a number of topics within sports, more importantly, in nutrition and exercise science. Let's welcome Professor Hawley to the show and become a more informed runner by end of this conversation. Let's go. Thank you very much for being with us today. And as we were discussing backstage, there are several common interests that we share. But of course, you are creating and you have created far larger impact. We are just following the footsteps in some way or another and having an opportunity to speak with you today to discuss about some of your research and academic interest areas is of great value.
Look, I'm looking forward to it and hope your audience will obviously take something away from this podcast.
They indeed will. How about I get started with a request to give a small introduction of yours to our listeners and then we'll get into the conversation.
Okay, in brief, I have to admit I'm a runner. I was a track runner, not a marathon or ultramarathon runner, but I've studied distance athletes for some time now. I grew up in the United Kingdom. Parents emigrated to New Zealand. Went back to the United Kingdom for my first degree in biology and sports science at Loughborough University. Then did a master's degree in the United States of America under David Costell, a very famous exercise physiologist, and then ventured down to Cape Town in South Africa, where I studied under Professor Tim Noakes. I'm now the director of the Mary MacKillop Institute for Health Research in Melbourne, Australia.
Awesome. That's very diverse. And like I was saying, the only thing that's left is possibly Asia Pacific, and we'll hopefully be able to get you over to India at some point of time.
I look forward to that.
Awesome. With that, let's get into the conversation, which we are hoping to go through. That is usage of carbohydrate for exercising and for racing both. When we think of carbs, generally, people want to avoid carbs. And when we as runners look at carbs, we start to get excited. Can we can we consume carbs? Can we carb load? Can we have different energy? Can we have carbs in different forms that we can increase utilization of carbohydrate over a period of training and racing? But before we get to any of that, how about we start from the very basic? What is carbohydrate and why is it preferred as a primary energy source for fueling?
All right, good question. Starting at the beginning, the muscle prefers to utilize carbohydrate because it's more efficient. And what do we mean by that? We mean that every liter of oxygen you take in, you actually get between 6 and 10% more energy for the muscle burning carbohydrate versus fat. So if your muscle has a choice and it looks out there for the most efficient substrate, whether that's fat or carbohydrate, it will tend to go towards carbohydrate. Now, very quickly in a nutshell, that is influenced by the intensity of the exercise. So for ultramarathon runners, you know, perhaps the carbohydrate needs aren't as great as perhaps someone who's running a 10K or a half marathon or a marathon. But there is no mistaking that independent of your event, carbohydrate is the primary fuel source for the muscle.
Got it. And are there other fuel sources as well for the body?
Yeah, look, fat is a substrate which is used. Protein, as you probably know, is not used extensively during exercise. Protein is ingested in very, very many forms, but it's used for muscle repair, muscle damage, etc., etc. Carbohydrate is the preferred fuel, as I said, but fats are also very, very useful as an energy source. And I think it's naive of the athlete, no matter what their event, to think that we just use fat or carbohydrate. And I think that's an important point to make to your audience. It's very rare that you're using 100% carbohydrate and very rare that you're using 100% fat. It is a mixture of the two fuels, depending on your fitness level, your pre-nutrition, the exercise intensity, and a couple of other factors. So I think the first message the audience needs to take away is that you're not just a carbohydrate machine or a fat machine. You're an integration of both fuels. And depending on the intensity of exercise and the factors that I've just mentioned, you will go towards one or the other.
Right. In other words, which most of runners will possibly know, primarily because of the smart wearables that they wear, is different zones that they come across when they are running. And I generally see the discussion around being zone 2 and zone 3 being the primary zones where people are utilizing more of these are aerobic possibly zones, and at this time they are primarily using fat. Is what they think. Is that the right understanding or not?
Look, the training zones is an interesting area. You know, you can talk about lactate threshold, ventilatory threshold, percent of your heart rate, percent of your maximum oxygen uptake. I mean, at the end of the day, the simple message is the faster and harder you're running, the more carbohydrate you're going to burn and the more the muscle prefers to use carbohydrate. And as we said earlier, you know, for events such as the Hawaii Ironman or ultra endurance events, I have no problem with athletes perhaps eating more fat than perhaps carbohydrate in preparation for those events, because the muscle is working at a relatively low intensity and has the capacity to utilize fat. But again, make no mistake, when you're running a 5, 10K or even a half marathon or a marathon, the body's fuel preference is carbohydrate.
Right. And so it seems it's important for training as well. How about I draw a persona and then we go through that scenario? That would be if I'm a beginner and I'm starting to train for a marathon, for example, and I start to come through various literature, various content that says I need to fuel myself before the run, during the run, and after the run. How do I see the role of carbohydrate in training before the run, during the run, and after the run?
Wow, that's a lot of questions all rolled. Yeah. Look, depending on the length of the training, let's say, let's take you as an example. Let's say you're running 60, 65 kilometers a week, something like that. You're probably doing one longish run at the weekend, which is what most distance runners do, probably, you know, 90 minutes to something like that. But most of your runs during the week are going to be probably less than an hour. The need to fuel carbohydrate during those runs is not that important. Your body fuels, depending on your diet, should have adequate carbohydrate stored in the form of muscle glycogen. Now, after sessions, carbohydrate is obviously very important, and you can replenish carbohydrate stores within, you know, 24 or 36 hours. So there really isn't a problem if you're, and I shouldn't say only training 60 or 70 kilometers a week, because that's a good base. But on the other hand, you don't need massive amounts of carbohydrate. And if I was to put a figure on it, you know, 5 to 6 grams of carbohydrate per kilogram of body weight is more than sufficient to cover the training demands of someone who's, you know, running 60 or 70 kilometers a week. Once you start getting over 100 kilometers a week and doing very long mileage is usually associated with better athletes, then the fuel demands for carbohydrate may well be higher.
Got it. No, that makes absolute sense. So now if I'm doing a run of an hour on an average on a weekday, and on Sunday I will run about 20 kilometers, that could be less than 2 hours, etc. So are we saying during these, say, 4 runs being of 1 hour each, do I need to have a breakfast or something before I go to run, or that's not needed?
Look, it depends. If your goal is to actually burn more fat, anytime you ingest carbohydrate, you suppress your fat metabolism, and you suppress it for several hours. So, for example, if I was to eat carbohydrate now and then actually go and train a couple of hours later, my rates of fat oxidation would obviously be far less than if I'd taken that same session in a fasted state. So there's not really one answer that fits all athletes. If, for example, an athlete can only train in the morning just due to practical reasons, work or whatever it happens to be, and they want to go out fasted, yes, they will burn more fat during that run versus if they'd have a breakfast. But that may not be their goal. So depending on the fuel status prior to exercise, you can actually swing the balance of carbohydrate and fat oxidation during exercise.
Got it. And now let's say if I take the example of my long run, which could be 2 hours or longer, how should I look at then fueling for this, regardless of where I am in my training? For example, if I need to be on my feet for 2 hours, 2.5 hours on my Sunday run, how do I look at it?
Yeah. My cutoff point for, firstly, let's look at ingesting before the exercise. If you're going to do a good Sunday run, the chances of having a high carbohydrate meal the night before will enhance it definitely. So you want to start the run in the best possible shape, or the muscle in the best possible shape. As I said, 90 minutes is about my cutoff point for starting to ingest carbohydrate during exercise. And there are many, many studies now to show that when you are competing in events or even training in events, anything longer than 90 minutes, that you should be ingesting carbohydrate. Now, that depends on your body mass, but again, if you can take in about 1 gram of carbohydrate per minute of exercise, so 60-odd grams an hour, that is very beneficial. One thing about ingesting carbohydrate during runs like that is that you have to practice it. You know, the gut is also what we call an athletic organ, and many people I've seen, you know, don't take in carbohydrate during training. They front up for a race or a marathon. It's the first time they've ingested carbohydrate, and they get gastrointestinal problems. So your training is very important to practice techniques that you may do in a race. So a good carbohydrate meal and carbohydrate meals the day before your long run, and start ingesting carbohydrate perhaps, you know, 30 to 40 minutes into your race. Of course, or your training session, I should say. You have to be prepared for that. So you have to actually have thought about where your carbohydrate sources are during your long runs. But definitely during a 2-hour run, I would be ingesting carbohydrate.
Sure. So I understood during training that we should plan for about up to 60 grams an hour and, of course, train for it so that the digestive system gets used to consuming and be able to ingest and keep it. And you don't throw up. I've seen during during possibly during May and June here in Mumbai, it becomes very difficult for us to be able to consume a lot of carbohydrate and keep it in the stomach because of the weather conditions, etc. as well. But when you talked about the carbohydrate meals in the morning of, say, I'm going to start my run at 6 a.m., will it be fair for me to have a breakfast or like a maybe oatmeal or something similar at 4 a.m.? Will that be fine or it's too close?
Well, if you want to get up at 4 a.m., I guess that's fine. But I'd be saying start your run later. But of course, the heat is a problem there, and it is in many countries. Look, the pre-training run meal is important. As I say, it can swing the balance of fuel utilization. The idea, though, is not to have substances or carbohydrates which are light and easily digestible. You don't want a high carbohydrate load, you know, sitting in the stomach as soon as you're going to start a race. So this is where I think some of the sports products do come into their own. You know, you can have gels, you can have various bars and the such like. So I wouldn't be sitting down to a breakfast which has a low glycemic index and has a lot of fiber, for example, because the body doesn't need that and it won't digest it easily before the run. So I would be having a very light breakfast. And again, the best thing for your audience to do is to experiment with their own individual foods and preferences and try it out in training. Because as you said, you know, I've seen a lot of races where people have been thrown up on the side of the road. And the point there is, especially in India, and you say in the summer, it's very, very hot. The body has a dilemma there. The blood flow goes to the skin to cool you. It doesn't go to the GI tract. So there are likely to be many more problems, if you've actually alluded to, when you're exercising or competing in the heat compared to a neutral environment such as, you know, 12 to 14 degrees Celsius. So you've sort of got a couple of problems there to contend with.
Sure. And during the training, when I'm looking to ingest, say, about 60 grams an hour, could it be coming from the sport drinks, gels, the chews, etc., or it can also be from the fruits and whole food? Of course, from convenience point of view, it doesn't make sense. But otherwise, would you think from an effect point of view, are they equally effective or not?
Look, most people these days will tend to go towards the sports drinks and gels. And there are many products out there. And there's been some great work from a friend and colleague, Asger Jurgendrup, looking at a mix of carbohydrates. So now we don't just ingest a glucose solution. We may ingest glucose with a little bit of fructose in the drink, because there are transporters in the gastrointestinal tract which can take in both glucose and fructose. And we see, for example, that the rates that the muscle can burn carbohydrate are actually extremely high. You know, if you're ingesting a gram a minute, and we did these studies many, many years ago to show that you can use or oxidize, the muscle can use or oxidize, you know, up to almost 2 grams of carbohydrate that's been ingested. So in those long runs, there is a definite need to ingest carbohydrate.
Got it. And so I understood, and here I have seen in India, while the consumption of gels, etc., is on the rise, still great quality products are not easily accessible to most people. While some of the companies are doing a good job at it, but still some of the world-class products are not easily available. For me personally, when I'm traveling to Europe or the US or anywhere else, I get my whole stock back to India and then I'm using it for next 6 months. But most of the runners are either limited to using what the organizer is providing in the race and may not be the best brand, for example, or they are making their own arrangements. And that's where this question particularly had come, whether it is okay for them to consume cola or banana or some of these things on their own instead of just using the gels.
Well, that's a really good question. And before we came on air, we mentioned both Frank Shorter. And if you remember, Frank Shorter in the 1972 Olympic marathon drank defizzed Coca-Cola, which has both a high carbohydrate concentration of around 11%, and it also has caffeine. We haven't talked about caffeine, but that's also a very good ergogenic aid for distance runners. So I have no problem there. Bananas are good. Any drink that you make at home probably should have a little bit of sodium and a little bit of salt, because obviously as you sweat, you lose some sodium as well. But again, we've done studies and looked at feeding, actually, you know, the cola type of drinks, and they do have a positive ergogenic effect, both for the high carbohydrate concentration and for the caffeine. But again, it's something you have to practice because, you know, defizzed Coke is one thing. Taking Coke while you're running at, you know, 15 kilometers an hour probably isn't the best thing unless you practice it during training.
Indeed. Now, around whole food, though, is it my right understanding that they should avoid any food, if at all, or fruits if they are wanting to consume on their run, while it's not going to be convenient to eat while running, but also from fiber point of view, if it has a lot of fiber, then they should possibly avoid, isn't it?
Well, the point there is that any solid or liquid gel is emptied from the stomach much faster than any solid food. So it's actually just as simple as that. Having said that, if you're looking at ultra marathon type events where you may be going from, you know, 12 to 24 hours, because the exercise intensity, firstly, is much lower, and because you're out there so much longer, then there is a need to actually supplement with, you know, your bananas and substances, which you probably wouldn't ingest, obviously, during a half marathon or a marathon. So, again, it's what we call horses for courses. You can ingest food, solid food, when you're not exercising as hard. It's as simple as that. Because, again, the blood flow to the stomach isn't reduced, and there are various other factors which make that, you know, a potentially a good ergogenic aid.
Sure. Now, the carbohydrate, how do I go and choose carbohydrate? Could it be anything that has carbs? Could it be simple, complex? Also, does glycemic index has a role to play when I'm selecting for my training or racing, for example?
When you're training or racing, and I presume here we're talking about during exercise,
yeah.
During exercise, I don't even worry about the glycemic index, because to take carbohydrate into the muscle, we need insulin. And during exercise, the muscle actually doesn't need that much insulin. It takes in carbohydrate almost independent of insulin. So we don't really pay too much attention to, you know, high carbohydrate, high glycemic index, whatever it is, during exercise. That may be a factor in a pre-exercise meal, but certainly, and maybe even in a post-exercise meal, but that's not really anything to worry about during exercise. Whereas I said, the carbohydrate should be easily digestible, easily consumable, taken in a liquid or a gel form, so that it does actually empty from the stomach and get into the bloodstream to the working muscle.
Sure. What we discussed so far does make a lot of sense for people who want to get started with a planned carbohydrate intake for their training or racing. But there are also a number of people who are our listeners. They have already been consuming gels and other carbohydrate sources for a long period of time, and they look for every opportunity to increase their intake per hour. There are the runners I know who are at 60 to 80 grams of carbs per hour, and they're looking to increase that. Do you think there are any strategies that would help increase it so that the deficit over a period of time is reduced and they have more carbohydrate available to themselves?
Well, look, there's some interesting data, and it's not on runners, it's on the Ironman in the Hawaii Ironman. And there's a very strong correlation there between the amount of carbohydrate that an athlete ingests and their actual finish time. Now, that's a correlation, and correlation isn't always causative. It may just simply, you know, be there independent of causation. But your question is, you know, is more carbohydrate better? And I guess up to a point it is, but there's only a certain amount that the stomach can empty and digest. So if you're looking at, I guess, better runners who are higher trained, runners who are running at a faster pace perhaps, then increasing above the 60 grams per minute is actually probably beneficial. Is there a cutoff point? Do we reach a limit? I'd say it's very, very, very difficult for a runner who's, let's just pick a pace, who's running at 4 minutes a kilometer to ingest more than 90 grams per hour, and I probably wouldn't be recommending that. In cycling, you can get away with it because your body weight's taken, your stomach's stable, you're not, you know, going up and down, there's no vertical oscillation of the movement of the center of gravity, and it's much easier to ingest larger amounts during cycling. But running, I would set a limit of 90 grams per hour, and I think most of your runners and most of your listeners will have trouble getting actually near 90 grams an hour.
Yeah, indeed. I personally cannot go above 60 grams. It just starts to make me almost nauseous, and I feel I'm full. I just cannot go beyond.
60 to 75 grams, I say, would be a very, very good target. You may get some outliers there of some few athletes who can just, 80 or 90, but it will be a very, very small minority of runners, I would say.
Right. Now, I have two more questions around here, and then I wanted to move to racing and carb loading for races. But before we get to that, the first question is, does fat-adapted trainings or any training that helps to adapt us to use fat as an energy source, does that also aid during racing, or it's more rather preferred to use carbohydrate? And I know you alluded to it in the start, but I needed your help to just explain this a little further.
Look, your listeners may or may not know of many of the studies which I've done in collaboration with Louise Burke, who is a very famous sports nutritionist and also actually is my wife, as it happens to be. And we have looked at high fat diets for athletes and events from 1 hour up to 4 hours. What we can tell you is this: fact number one, you can encourage the muscle to use more fat when you fat adapt an athlete. What do we mean by fat adapt? We mean in as little as 5 days, giving them a high fat diet, perhaps 60% of their total energy intake. We can retool the muscle to use fat. Now, having said that, when you get on the start line and the race gun goes, your body switches to carbohydrate. We have, in 5 or 6 studies, it may be even more now, and not just from our lab, from other laboratories in the world, we have been unable to show a performance benefit in events lasting 4 hours or less when an athlete is fat adapted. Yes, you can burn more fat, but when you put your pedal down on the gas and you're in a marathon, your body still prefers carbohydrate. So I'm not massively big on fat adapted diets, and there's a lot of keto diets and various things out there. Don't be fooled by those. The literature and the science is strong. Carbohydrate is still the preferred fuel during exercise up to 4 hours.
Carbohydrate it is. And now, caffeine, you talked about. How does caffeine really help in running better, running efficiently, or does it do anything else other than that?
That's a really good question. And again, we go back to Frank Shorter here, because Frank Shorter drank Defiz Coke in the marathon in 72, but it wasn't until 1974 that David Kostel showed that ingesting caffeine in a controlled laboratory situation enhanced endurance performance. Now, at the time, he thought it was because caffeine had this effect on what we call lipolysis, which is where you break down lipids and they enter the bloodstream. In other words, he thought that it was the muscle using more fat and sparing its carbohydrate. We now know that not to be true. That was actually wrong. The likely benefit from caffeine and its performance-enhancing effects comes from the central nervous system stimulation. And any time you ingest caffeine, it sends a message to the brain to say that this exercise actually feels a little bit easier than it really is. So it doesn't really have a true metabolic effect. It has more effect on the central nervous system and your perception of effort while you're running.
Wow. Okay. And would you mind talking us through how to look at caffeine consumption? When I'm a layperson, do I think of a latte, a cappuccino, or do I look at a mocha or an espresso? How do I approach it?
Well, look, if you want to be really precise now, you can get capsules and pills which have a definite quantity of caffeine in them. And it's interesting you say that about your latte or your various forms of caffeine. Unless you know where you're getting your product from, you're probably going to be quite misled as to how much caffeine there is in a cup of coffee. It can vary from 50 milligrams up to 100 milligrams. So let's just go there first and say that if you want to really do this properly, you probably need to get capsules or the such like that the exact quantity. Now, what is the exact quantity? We used to think it was a huge dose. We used to think it was between 6 and 9 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, which is, you know, enough to make an elephant sprint. It's just a crazy amount. We now know that as little as 3 or 4 grams per kilogram of body weight is adequate. And that may be, you know, as simple as 2 cups of coffee. I mean, it depends on what your body can tolerate. Some people can tolerate caffeine. Some people can tolerate soda. Some people like the caffeine capsules better. When to take it, I guess, is the next question. And in the hour before exercise, but also in the studies that we've done during exercise itself, which explains why, you know, Frank Shorter started ingesting caffeine after 20 kilometers of his marathon in 1972. So if I was an endurance athlete and I was, you know, going to compete in a half marathon or marathon, I would be taking in carbohydrate and I would absolutely be taking in caffeine too.
Got it. And you said about 3 to 4 mg per kilogram of body weight. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Got it.
Absolutely. And again, 2 to 3 strong cups of coffee will do that. I guess one question which I'm always asked by runners is, what happens if, and I'm presuming you are, a habitual caffeine drinker, do I still get the bang for the buck? And the answer is yes. You know, I've seen athletes abstain from caffeine the week before a race. There's no need to do that whatsoever. The studies are quite clear on that now, that it doesn't matter if you do ingest caffeine habitually during the day and, you know, at work and this, that and the other, you still get an ergogenic effect during exercise. So the good news is you don't have to stop your coffee a week before a race.
Awesome. I'm happier. And I'm almost addicted to, borderline addicted to caffeine consumption. As soon as I wake up, my first reaction is I go to the app, switch on the machine, 20 minutes, it's heated, and then go make my espresso, and then only I head out.
There you go. It's a kickstart to the day for most people. And again, it's a kickstart if you're running, exactly the same effect. So carbohydrate and caffeine are kings when it comes to endurance events like the marathon.
Right. Slight anecdote. Here we have a very famous Mumbai Marathon that happens every year. About 50, 55,000 people run in all categories put together. And there is a small incline, there's small... I won't say hill, it's more like a small overbridge kind of incline, about 25, 30 meters over 300 meters. And this comes at 15th kilometer in the half marathon, and it comes at 35th kilometer, 34th kilometer in the marathon. And then a bunch of us a few years ago came up with a plan, anecdotally, somehow, incidentally, we figured that if we had a caffeine gel about a kilometer before starting to climb, that it just felt easier. And and then later we realized, oh yeah, it's the sense of perceived exertion that it's reducing. But we didn't realize that back then, but that's what I think we are alluding, isn't it?
Yeah, look, most of the beneficial effects of caffeine, as I said, come from the central nervous system and your perception of effort. So anything that can reduce your perception of effort, and again, taking caffeine late in the race makes perfect sense. You know, at 30 to 35K, your legs are falling apart and everything, you know, everything's a mess. So caffeine at later stages in the race is very, very important also. So you should be titrating it through the duration of the race, not just having it at the beginning and not just having it at the end. But if you can get it, especially in the gels, which contain, you know, both carbohydrate and caffeine, that is the best practice.
Right. Now, I wanted to move to the second part, that is on how to prepare for the race from carbohydrate loading perspective. And suppose I'm going to do a marathon, how many days out from the race day do I start to think of carb loading, and how do I approach the next several days?
All right. So it'll be a reasonably long answer here. We used to think that you used to have to do an exhaustive run 5 or 6 days before the marathon to deplete your glycogen. And then when we fed carbohydrate later on in the week, your muscle would act like a super compensated sponge and soak up all the carbohydrate it could. Now, we know you don't need to do that now. There's many, many studies that have shown that you don't need to do that depletion run. So let's get that out there straight away. You do not need to do a 30K run a week before a marathon, which wouldn't make much sense anyway, to deplete carbohydrate. What you do need to do, though, and this is where most of the runners seem to trip up sometimes, is that you do need to reduce the training volume in that week. So let's say an athlete such as yourself, you're running 60, 70 kilometers a week. Probably should be doing a little bit more if you're going to run a marathon.
By the time we speak next, I will be there.
And let's say, you know, as we said before, you're ingesting 5 grams per kilogram of body mass for most of your training. In that 3 or 4 days before the marathon, you should aim to increase that, if you can, over 8 grams per kilogram. Now, that's really hard to do because ingesting that amount of food comes with fiber, comes with a lot of other things that you probably don't need in those latter stages. The last thing you want to do is get on the race line 2 or 3 kilos heavier than your training weight. And don't forget that for each gram of glycogen, which is the storage form of carbohydrate in the muscle, your muscle holds on to about 2 grams of water. So you will get, you may well be, you know, 500 grams, maybe even a kilo heavier on the line, but that's stored fuel and you will be needing that. So during the last week before the marathon, in the 4 days before, you aim to increase your carbohydrate. You aim to reduce the volume of training, but very important here is that the intensity should still be there. You don't want to detrain physiologically in that last week. And obviously, depending on the level of the runner, some runners may have a rest day in that period or not. The elite runner probably won't. They'll probably just taper their training. So taper the training, increase the amount of carbohydrate, do not have a massive depletion run to exhaustion a week before, as per some of the old studies in the 70s.
Got it. And so if I put it in more practical terms for people to understand, I'm 75 kilos. And so if I had to look at how many grams of carbohydrate I'll require, I will possibly be requiring 600 grams of carbs per day in maybe 4 days before the run is when I start to carb load. And I continue to carb load about 600 grams throughout the day, hopefully because I'm not going to be able to eat in one or two sittings that much. So about 2,400, 2,500 calories per day. Will it go on until one day before the race day, or do I increase or decrease in the last couple of days?
No, you can maintain that. And again, you know, practice makes perfect here. You've hit one good point there. For athletes who are, you know, 75, 80 kilo, 600 to 700 grams of carbohydrate a day is a lot of pasta or a lot of bread or a lot of rice. And this is where I think perhaps the best use of the gels and the sports products can come into play. It's a lot of food for the stomach and the gastrointestinal system to digest. So what you want to be doing is having easily digestible foods or drinks or gels during that week. Because if you've tried to eat 700 grams of carbohydrate at 75 kilo, that's an awful lot of food. And again, remember, food comes with fiber and the such like. So now we have something called a low resolution diet, where you really want to take out as much of the fiber in those foods as you can in the last weeks. So I know marathon runners, you know, who normally eat very healthy and fruit and high fiber and this, that, and the other, they don't have a massive intake of those type of foods in the 3 or 4 days before a marathon, because you literally want pure and simple carbohydrate without all the other things that go with it.
Yeah. And this becomes particularly more important when people are traveling to other countries where the food may not be as naturally be available to you what you are used to training. And so I guess doing a bit of planning will help them find those food items. And you're very right. I remember first time when I did Chicago Marathon, I was pretty geeky when it came to the carb loading, and I had written somewhere 8 gram to 10 gram per kilogram of body weight. I used to be about 71 kgs. Then I remember day one, I consumed that much and I was bloated.
Exactly.
And it was quite uncomfortable. And then we had to find different other ways to consume that much of carbohydrate.
But your point's really valid here. You have to be organized and plan. It doesn't just happen. You know, you don't just want to walk into restaurants and order, you know, mountains and mountains of pasta. You must plan. And again, I would have done this in a training run before the marathon. You don't experiment with anything on race day. And again, I'll say that again to your audience. Don't do something in a race that you've not practiced in training, because the chances are the food or whatever it is will end up on the side of the road and you will not be a happy customer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny you say this because yesterday I was speaking with someone who's running MDS in a few weeks from now. And he has ordered, because self-supported run, so he has ordered all expedition food. And so he asked me to order. I ordered the food for him. And when he received the food, it was double than what he was supposed to carry. And he called me. He said, "Why have you ordered so much food?" I asked him, "Have you eaten this food ever before?" He said, "No, I'll eat in the race. Why do I spend more money?" I was like, "No, you may not be able to digest." So now he's actually eating at home. I said, "If you have not trained, at least eat now and figure out how it even tastes."
Very sensible, very scientific approach. No, that's a great anecdote because it's exactly what I'm saying. And I have seen even elite athletes. There's a very good example of an Australian runner who I won't mention who had 1974 or whatever Commonwealth Games, had not tried a dietary strategy and tried it on race day and would have won a gold medal, except she threw up on the side of the road. So you must practice what you hope to achieve in a race.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. Now on the race day, I took a few points from the training on a long run. What do you do? Start with a possibly early morning breakfast or some simple carbohydrate that you can consume. I'm assuming something similar can go on here. And then as I come to the start line, do I plan along the lines of what you suggested of consuming about 60 grams per hour? And I start to consume carbohydrate maybe 15, 20 minutes before I start to run? Or how do I approach the race day?
Again, a lot of science has been done on this. The main factor which determines how much fluid leaves the stomach is actually how much fluid there is in the stomach. So we call it gastric emptying. Now, I don't want to confuse your audience here, but what you should be aiming to do is repeated little drinks often rather than getting to an hour and thinking, "Oh, I've missed two aid stations. I need to drink 500 mils." You're not going to ingest 500 mils in one gulp. That's not going to happen. So you're better to ingest frequently during the race, starting, I would say, after 30 or 45 minutes, and they're trying to repeat. Now, again, in most marathons, particularly the big inner city marathons, there are plenty of opportunities to drink. So you should have a strategy planned that I'm going to start my drinking, let's just say arbitrarily, at 8K, and I'm then going to have X amount of fluid at every aid station, every 5 kilometers or something like that, you know, every 20 odd so minutes. That would be my drinking pattern, to repeatedly drink fluid in smaller volumes every 15 to 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And also, you're right, it should be done regularly because, at least from my personal experience, I've seen as I progress towards the fag end of the race, I'm a lot more fatigued and tired, and my ability to be able to take carbohydrate reduces. And so if I have taken regularly, at least my deficit is not as high as at this stage.
Well, you've got to remember that, you know, that's a very good point, that you ingest something now, it doesn't instantly get absorbed into the bloodstream in 1 minute. So it's literally like topping a petrol tank up, and you want the petrol tank to overflow, the stomach to overflow all the while. So repeated little and often, but again, a strategy. And often, you know, I see runners at the end of the race and they say, "Oh, you know, it went wrong." I say, "What happened?" They say, "Well, I missed my aid station from 20 to 30K. I didn't get anything for 10 kilometers. And, you know, they just fall into a hole then. So repeated and often, carbohydrate and caffeine.
Yeah. Makes sense. Very perfect. Thank you so much for that. Now, if I've finished my race, how do I end with carbohydrate intake and its usage for recovery? Do I need to, or do I now need to go and gulp my protein down?
If you've just finished a marathon and you're happy with that, you just need to go get a big meal and have a beer. I mean, you're not going to run another marathon for 3 or 6 months. So, you know, it doesn't really matter. You're going to be sore. You're going to be stiff. You hopefully have done a PB, a personal best, and you've crossed the finish line and everything's worked out. If not, then you're probably starting to think about your next marathon already. But, you know, that next week is just for, you know, rest and relaxation sort of thing. Yes, it's important to get protein to repair damaged muscle. Yes, you're probably likely to have damaged muscle after a marathon. But really, what are you going to do in that next week? Just enjoy the occasion and worry about your carbohydrate, fat and protein the week after.
Agree. and beer tastes and sounds better for sure.
Yeah, I like it. The other thing is, of course, your body's pretty good at telling you what it needs. You know, you may remember running marathons, particularly in hot climates, you crave salty food. Your body actually is very good at telling you what it wants. It doesn't really feel like sitting down to a massive steak post a marathon. Your body's craving usually carbohydrate, usually sodium in the form of salt. And so listen to your body after that marathon. And as I say, just enjoy the rest of the day because you'll be sore the next day.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that's very true. If one starts to think how body's feeling, it starts to give indications early on what you need to consume when. And going on that and being able to listen to it makes absolute sense. And I think for me particularly, it helps really well. I do not look at kilometers. I try to be self-supported. So I'll carry my water, etc. And then maybe refill that at a water station. But I'll have it when I feel like I need to have it.
Well, here's one thing, and this isn't physiology, this is psychology. There's been many, many studies done, including which one I did many, many years ago, looking at the mental strategies of people during a marathon. The elite runners, they do what they call an associative strategy. They're always thinking about their body and how they feel, their foot placement and everything else. The unelite runner tends to, you know, count sheep or to do something to distract them. And I would say to your audience, try and be in tune with your body. Don't try and think of, you know, your friend's birthday or this, that, and the other. Try and think strategy, my race plan. Have a plan, stick to the strategy. So that's the difference between, if you like, the people who finish in 2 hours and the people who finish in 5 hours. If you can start to listen to your body, you know pretty much after 5 or 10K if you're going to have a good race. Try and zone into your body and what it's telling you.
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you so much for beautiful wisdom nuggets. And these make a lot of sense for us, all of us as listeners. And hopefully we will get to have you to speak on another topic whenever there is an opportunity next. But this was a great conversation. And I think, if nothing else, this was a great masterclass on carbohydrate consumption.
Look, really appreciate it. Look, thank you for having me on. I hope your listeners gained something for the program. And my only tip now is if you want to run under 3 hours again, you've probably got to up the mileage.
I will, and I promise I'll be there soon.
All right. Very nice to meet, and thanks very much.
That was all for today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you did, please leave feedback, a review for us, and we would be very happy to receive that. Keep learning, keep running, and keep staying fit. Goodbye for now.